Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herndon deal. Chris Herndon joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is Winter Storm 98 by the indie rock side project Cadillaca, one of my favorite snow songs. That advocates going for a walk.
Do we have more snow than you have? What do you have right now?
Yes. We had really no snow until middle of the day yesterday. We got about 6 inches a couple weeks ago, and it warmed up and melted. And then it started snowing yesterday afternoon, but it's been pretty light. So we've got, I don't know, maybe 2 inches.
So the Grizzlies are headed to Minnesota. Are you going to be there in person Saturday?
That's the plan.
Oh, that'll be nice. Our Minnesota correspondent chiming in on the Grizzlies from up there. All right, so last night Grizzlies lose to Houston. Let's just start with what Taylor Jenkins started with, the timeout that he called with 3.1 seconds left. What did you think of that?
Yeah, it was clearly a mistake in retrospect. It's easier to say in retrospect than, like, you got to make a flash decision in the moment. It looks worse because Bane made the shot. It still would have been a mistake if Bane had missed the shot, just in terms of, like, the right decision in that moment. But it was a mistake, which he acknowledged. I don't think we need to, like, you know, get an international criminal court together about it or anything. But, yeah, that was a mistake.
I think it was clearly a mistake. It was funny. Like, he was so pissed off at his press conference. A man of many words became a man of very, very, very few words and focused largely on that mistake, and yet it didn't, certainly that doesn't seem like, to the extent that anything was troublesome in the game from the Grizzlies' perspective, that did not seem to be something that I'm going to fret a lot about going forward. The players all said, lots of reasons we lost that game, blah blah blah, it was all fine. So the other themes were, Grizzlies got bullied again. What did you make of last night's game? Why did the Grizzlies lose?
Well, you know, it's two good teams, and it's a single possession game in the final second. So, like, you know, I mean, right. It's up for grabs, and so the outcome in that respect is not that big of a deal. It was a game where, given all the free throw shots, the free throws that Houston missed, it probably shouldn't have been that close late.
That's what I thought.
So I think the quality of play across 48 minutes was more in the Rockets' favor than even the outcome was. You know, there's different ways to look at it. You can look at it from a real macro sense of, you know, the Grizzlies do not have a good record against other Western Conference playoff contending teams. That is a notable thing. It is a thing I have noted. So are the Grizzlies a bit of a mirage to certainly start? I think there's real things there to talk about. You can look at it from a little bit more specific thing and think, is Houston a bad matchup? Like, you know, they sort of got pushed around by Houston early in the season. They're 0-2 against the Rockets now. The Rockets are a kind of team that sort of neutralizes the Grizzlies' depth advantages, maybe exposes some of the athleticism issues, especially given strength and athleticism issues, which I think are compounded by Marcus Smart, Vince Williams, Gigi Jackson not being out there, because I think if you're going to put, like, your eight best athletes or eight most physical players on the floor, like, all three of those guys might be a part of it. Or you can get hyper-specific about sort of the game itself. And I do think there's an element of that, too. Yeah, they got all these guys back, and that was great. But all the in and out over the last week or so has sort of thrown things, the rhythm off a little bit. And I think that was a disjointed team going up against an elite defense, and like those two things sort of collided against each other. I think there's something to all three of those things.
Yeah. I certainly agree on that part. And although, for example, just take Ja. Ja's numbers were fine. I didn't think it was great Ja. You know, I didn't think it was vintage Ja. Body language a little weird in the first half. I just didn't think he was at his best. And, he's just coming back from injury. So I do think there was absolutely an element of this. Yeah, sure, the three core players are back, but they're not necessarily back at their best playing together. I think that is certainly true. To take some of the bigger things, though, Chris. We have a return of the objection that Taylor Jenkins doesn't play his best players when other teams do. He had played 11 players in the first quarter before the Rockets made a change, and then from the 7-minute mark to the 3-minute mark, Ja and Jaren were on the bench. Is that an issue for you?
The minutes totals for me in that game are not really much of an issue. I mean, Jaren played 34, by the way. And Jaren and Ja both were at the side at the table and checked in for like 2 minutes until they got in. And so in theory, if they had an extra timeout or whatever, he was trying to play.
That's what I thought. He was trying to get him in. He was trying to get him in. And he saved the timeout, which he then used in ill-advised fashion, but he was actually trying to get him in.
So he was actually trying to play Jaren and Ja more than he actually did, and Jaren still played 34. All three of those guys were on the injured list at the start of the day, so I wasn't really expecting that to be a 35-minute game for those guys. I do think that come playoff time, they're going to ramp up their stars' minutes. I think they're not mostly going to do that in the regular season, except for certain circumstances, which we had in the past week when they had like 5 guys out. I think that's mostly not what they're going to do, and is it going to cost them some wins here and there? Yeah, and that's just baked in. That's what they're going to do. I think the bigger question to me related to that in that game is not even so much the 11 guys in the first quarter, because at some point with this team, like, what's the gap between guys 4 through 11 anyway?
Right.
You know, I think it's more there was a stretch where they had all three. They had Ja, Jaren, Dez all on the bench. And I think when you have all three of those guys, you don't need to do that, right? Like, they had a lineup that was something like, I'm making this up, but I think this is right. It's something like Kennard, LaRavia, Huff.
Pepin.
I don't know. It was some weird lineup like that that had none of your stars and didn't really have a point guard. And, like, that felt very, like, preseason or regular season or laboratory kind of stuff. And it is still the first half of the season, but I think if they can maintain better health going forward, you have most of your guys, they need to get the start fine-tuning the lineups they really want to play. And I don't think in the middle of a game against a tight game against another playoff-level team, that's necessarily a lineup you want to have out there. Look at Cleveland. Like, we all just watched this Cleveland-OKC game, right?
Yep.
And we talked about this a little bit yesterday. Cleveland has these 4 stars, right? And you don't play them all, like, together for 48 minutes. But when they break it up, they tend to have, like, subsections of them, right? They'll start and end with all their guys, and then in the middle of the game, they'll have stretches where it's Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley, and then Garland and Allen are on the bench, and then they'll flip it in other stretches. And I think the Grizzlies with Ja, Dez, Jaren sort of need to have probably one of those guys on the floor all the time when they're trying to win basketball games.
So some of these issues, of course, all these issues converge. We ask the larger question, are they a fraud, or do they struggle, or is it whatever? Is their record illusory because they beat up good team, they beat up bad teams and beat whatever? But all this stuff somewhat converges because, in other words, does the style which they play, which leads to turnovers, lots of people playing, whatever else, wearing people, like, does that help account for one of the reasons that they might be illusory and might struggle against some of the better teams? That this style of both substitutions, speed of play, depth, all of that works well against the Wizards, but less good against the elite teams.
Yeah, maybe. I would say, like, you still want to beat the Wizards, right?
Yes.
And so, like, it's not like a bad thing that you're to run off on these mediocre teams. Like, that's good. And that helps keep your minutes down, by the way, when you do that. But the question is, like, you know, are you prepared for the way things may change against better teams than in playoff basketball? Because I think they're going to get slowed down, right? You know, And so it's not that you shouldn't play fast and win by 40 against the Raptors. Like, go ahead and do that. But you have to be prepared when the game's not like that. And I think a lot of times the game is not going to be like that. We're also still in the first half of the season. Everyone thinks the season's too long, and I agree, but it is long. And it's sort of an evolutionary situation. Like, the team, it's about what team are you taking into the playoffs. And that team sort of changes and becomes something different over the course of the season. And the goal is for it to become a better thing, right? And that somewhat remains to be seen. The sample is still fairly small in the other games against the West. I think the Grizzlies have actually played fewer of them than other teams in the West. You've still had a lot of absences both ways. You know, you've missed guys, other teams have missed guys. To me, it is a notable thing I'm keeping an eye on. I'm not at the point of making a declaration about it. The sample's about to build in a hurry. Like, they're going to play five straight games like this, and they're going to play hopefully five straight games with Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson, Desmond Bane all available. I don't think at the end of those five we make some definitive declaration, but I think we have a lot more information five games from now than we do right now.
Yes, long season. Teams change. Look at Dallas last year, and I don't expect the Grizzlies to make that sort of deadline maneuvers,
but what happens with the reintegration of Vince Williams, Marcus Smart, and GG Jackson?
I was about to say that. They have players coming from somewhere else, which is off the injured list. So you've got, and you can also have internal improvement. Zach Edey, hopefully, is going to get better. So this team will not look the same at the end of the season that it looks right now. But I would ask this. So you suggested that the issue with Houston may be matchup. And no question, those reinforcements will help when it comes to this matchup. Is it just matchup, or is it also point to a problem or a hole in the roster? If you look at Houston and freaking Sengun, what he was able to do against them, if you look at Anthony Davis, who's great against everybody, and what he's able to do against them, how worried are you about their center rotation and about Zach Edey?
Oh, I think Edey needs to be a more consistent option by the end of the season. I think that is clearly true. Edey's missed a lot of games. Edey has missed a lot of games. I think getting more consistent Edey games and even more consistent Edey with Ja games, I think, is going to help that. I definitely think it's important for the team to go into the playoffs with a Zach Edey they feel is more reliable than the Zach Edey they have right now. I do think that is important. You know, I sort of wondered at one point last night, are they ever going to switch Jaren onto Sengun? You know, obviously you're always worried about fouls with Jaren, but Jaren had like zero fouls at halftime, I think. You know, I don't know if he ended the game with, what, two or three, something like that. I sort of wondered if they were going to at some point do that switch, and which they never fully did. Your team's not perfect. That's true. I do think it's important, but to your question, I think Edey is not. There's only one Zach Edey on this team, right? Jay Huff doesn't do what Zach Edey does and vice versa. But in terms of matching physicality against certain matchups, I think it's going to be important that Zach Edey can be a factor in a series against Houston, in a series against the Lakers, in a series against Denver, some of these teams.
We talk about reinforcements that are coming off the bench and who knows what they might do at the trade deadline. You think about adding a big who can shoot, whatever. A power forward, small forward type who can shoot. Can you imagine that they might conclude between now and the trade deadline that Zach Edey is not going to become what they need him to become by the end of the season, and that is a place where they would seek to make reinforcements?
I doubt it. I doubt it. Anything's possible. But I just partly I don't see them making that conclusion. They want to add a center.
Right.
Also, don't necessarily see the player out there in terms of who's on the market. So I'm doubtful about that.
All right. Anything else particularly striking from last night's game? Here's the other thing. Honestly, the rookies weren't good. That's a point you've raised before. They got two rookies in the starting lineup. Neither rookie was good last night. And that's whatever. It's one night. They may be better. They've been pretty damn good. But when they play in the playoffs, it'll be the first time those rookies play in the playoffs. And this is an issue of concern that you've raised before.
Well, this team was built going into the season, I think, with the idea that I think the way the team's constructed, like if they lose a close game, everyone's going to second guess the fourth, the fifth guys on the floor. Because it's not clear at all who the fourth and fifth guys should be. 1 through 3 is pretty clear. I think this team was constructed going into the season with the idea that one of those guys is going to be either Marcus Smart or Vince Williams Jr. And that might still be the case, but it very much remains to be seen. But I think the idea of this team is that one of those two guys is going to be, you know, your fourth guy. And then in terms of the front court, I do think just it's just going to have to be more matchup oriented, given how different, you know, Zach Edey and Santi Aldama and Brandon Clark and Jay Huff are from each other. But your hope is that they're all good enough that whoever makes the most sense in the matchup is the guy you can play and get minutes out of. But I don't think that, you know, I think this team is not settled into knowing who it is and what it wants to be in terms of those lineups and roles yet.
Right. Chris, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. Over the weekend, you'll be able to read Chris's report from Minnesota. Grizzlies head to Minnesota. They play the Timberwolves for the first time this year. And then they got Houston again. And, boy, there was some eagerness to take another shot at Houston in the locker room last night. They got Houston again at Houston on Monday.
So I mentioned this on yesterday's afternoon show. I do think Houston has a chance to be that rival that we've been seeking.
Oh, there was a lot of reasons to hate him last night. There's no question. You got Dylan hanging on the rim, doing push-ups on the rim in the first 30 seconds.
He was just trying to be safe.
And then you got the head coach asked. It was a little weird, like in pregame.
I don't know if you're familiar with Ime's work. There's a lot of little
he
weird.
He was asked if they had ever shown Sengun film of Marc Gasol playing defense, and he just took an out of the where the left field shot at Mark, basically saying, I'll leave it at that. I was stunned. He won Defensive Player of the Year that year. It was like I saw no reason to be piling on, taking a shot at Marc Gasol. Now, mind you, he was on the team that the Grizzlies beat, and maybe he's still bitter about that, petty about that. Yeah. The Spurs team that the Grizzlies beat for the Grizzlies' first playoff series whenever was not on the Spurs teams and was not still playing. He was out of the league by the time Mark did win Defensive Player of the Year. But that was something. I think it's a very hateable team.
I think that
and they're physical enough too, you know. Well,
and
chippy.
Obviously, you have the Dylan factor
and the Dylan factor,
and like that's gonna already put it. But also, if you look at it right now in the standings, there's a decent chance that like they could meet in a playoff series. And you telling me that 7 games
of that?
That would
we would hate them very quickly.
Yes.
We would hate them very quickly. And I thought they got a good start on it last night. But in fairness, if you're going to have that kind of a rivalry with that team, okay, this is just true. I'm just calling it like it is. When the Grizzlies played the Clippers, who was the punk? Who got punked? Who got punked in that series? And then I'll tell you who got punked. The Clippers got punked. The Grizzlies they were tougher than the Clippers. Now they didn't always win the series, but they were the team that was bullying the other team.
Yeah, I think probably
you don't want to be the team that's getting punked. And right now, when it comes to this series with the Rockets, you're the team that's getting punked.
The Grizzlies have a problem. They have not proven that they're anything other than front runners.
Yeah,
this group.
That's exactly right. They've lost multiple series when they had the home court advantage.
Yep.
And the whole we don't bluff stuff is that it doesn't right now.
It's a slogan.
It does not. It's a slogan from the past.
Yes.
It does not fit.
No, they're front runners.
These Grizzlies, and so they should want to take another shot at Houston because right now they've been punked by Houston twice. What Chris said is exactly right. Like, you can look at this game as, hey, one possession game could have gone. No, it wasn't. The truth of the matter is, from the jump, Houston was the better team.
Yeah,
the
Grizzlies, I felt like last night was they were lucky to be in the game.
100%. The Grizzlies scrambled back into it because Houston couldn't hit a foul shot. And because they get some miracle freaking heaves. The one from Santi, you know, Luke had one. And, you know, they're good shooters, whatever. But they have miracle heaves And Dylan,
they're good shooters, but those are not high. Yeah, like, no. It's not like those were quality
The Grizzlies did not lose that game in a single possession game. That's not what it was. They somehow, by some dint of some miracle, scrambled back into it and couldn't take advantage of the fact that they scrambled back into it because Houston missing every foul shot, and therefore, but they were beaten soundly by Houston last night. I never thought, and by the way, I wanted the Grizzlies to win both because I live in Memphis, but also because it's a much better column.
Sure.
As I was sitting there. Yeah. I never thought the Grizzlies were going to win that game.
No, I agree with you. Like, the whole time, like, I don't know. I guess the way that I looked at it was Houston winning by three felt like one of the smallest margins they could have won by.
Yeah. They got some things to prove. Again, they got reinforcements on the way. Some of their tougher, more athletic players on the way back. But they are much needed because that was, it wasn't a great night. Steven Adams got a nice ovation. When he was introduced, and Dylan, man, he wasted no time.
It was unbelievable.
It was kind of
like
hilarious. And then he was complaining about the call.
He hung
on that damn rim for 35 seconds.
I don't know what angle you had. The TV had the perfect angle of Dez. So they show the play, but it's like the replay that they were showing afterwards. They had like the perfect angle of Dylan or of Dez, like, after, like, Dylan's hanging there and then goes for, like, that second pump, the look of Dez's face is like, are we really doing this right now?
Crazy. All right. Here's the news on O'Call. They're not open today, but they're damn sure open on Saturday. That's from Paul. Even if you have to open a little later than usual. Crews lined up to clean the lot and sidewalks for the Saturday afternoon sale. Big day. Semi-annual sale is underway at O'Call. Fall and winter merchandise. Men's and women's fall and winter merchandise. You still need to stay warm, folks. No better time. You'll want to get out of the house by then, certainly. And so Saturday, take advantage of the semi-annual sale at O'Call. It'll be festive. Great savings and festive. I'll see you there. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in a moment. 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Hope you're staying warm wherever you are. Have you heard any weather updates, Jeff, or anything that we need to tell the people?
Nothing that I have seen coming across the dial.
No, over at the Daily Memphian, the reports are from the city that things are, everything's going smoothly. If you have anything urgent you need to tell us about traffic or about anything you've observed, something that the people need to know, we are here to spread the word. And the phone number is 445-0929, 445-0929. If there's any urgent weather news or updates that you need to offer, while we are digging out from a legit 6 inches of snow in Los Angeles, they continue to battle these fires, which are horrific. And, of course, they have now moved the NFL game to Arizona. And so the game that was supposed to be played in SoFi has now been moved to Arizona, the Rams-Vikings game. Let's be honest, I feel bad for everyone there, like, J.J. Redick has lost his house, evidently. Steve Kerr has lost his family home. Like, this is, you know. And here's the thing. You can have all the money in the world. It's still not fun to have everything you own burned to the ground, right? Like,
Also going to be an insurance problem.
There's going to be a massive insurance problem in America. And, hell, we may talk to Fishman about this. I actually recently learned that my homeowner's insurance is going to be dropped because the carrier I have is not insuring Tennessee anymore. And it's because of hurricanes. I mean, because of tornadoes, right? It's because of tornadoes.
Sure.
I think that they're not hurricanes. Because of tornadoes.
So hurricanes would be a new one.
Hurricanes would be a new one. So I think it's because of tornadoes. So I need to go find new homeowner's insurance. But let's be honest, this is not as big an issue as Tennessee as it is in Florida, massive issue because of hurricanes.
Yep.
And California, massive issue because of fires. And so what's happened is all these insurers are bailing out, and there's been a new state government plan that has been
Well, I think why this one is also going to be a huge deal is you can get fire insurance in California. It's remarkably expensive. So a lot of people don't have fire insurance because of the cost of the premium. But all of these houses are in significantly affluent places that
I saw someone on Twitter just saying, my so-and-so I know has a $2.5 million home. He was just offered $750,000 cash for the land.
Yeah.
Probably didn't have insurance, whatever else. And again, these people have real money, so maybe you don't feel bad about them. But it is an issue when you can't get insurance for the thing that is likely to take, most likely to take your home. But anyway, that game has been moved. In the end, it didn't feel like the Rams deserved home field advantage over Minnesota, right? Like, necessarily. But this is not the way you would want a game to be moved. It seemed to make sense to move it, right?
Does seem I mean, we were always going to... It is funny how... It's funny when you watch, like... We've always had this divide between college and NFL football. And so, when you had the 12-team playoff and you had college football fans, like, griping about, well, this team gets a home game, that team does, like... The NFL's dealt with this forever. Yeah. I mean, how did the Saints feel when they had to go to the freaking, were they 8-8? Were they 7-9 Seahawks or 8-8? But when they had to go, and then they had the beast mode games. Like, yeah, there, people have been griping about this forever.
Talk about more about the NFL here in a moment, but a little college, more college football first. Obviously, it was a spectacular game last night. And you raised the question, Jeffrey. You know how when the NCAA tournament starts, every year you will hear me, regular as clockwork, say the same thing. This is not the greatest sports weekend of the year.
Yes.
Everyone wants to tell you it is. I will tell you it ain't.
Gary has his argument that turkey's not good.
And Jeff, I have my argument that no, it is not. It's not. Honestly, it's not as good as Super Bowl Sunday. If you think it is, why don't poor people watch on Super Bowl Sunday? Mm-hmm. It's not as good as the first weekend of the NFL season. Like there are weeks. It's not as good as, what's your favorite NFL playoff weekend?
I like division weekend.
Okay, it's not as good as division weekend. Like, in just terms of what I'm like, it's great. It's great. But let's not lie to ourselves and say it's better than those things.
Although I've had to reassess my divisional take because now we don't have as many. Like, it used to be divisional weekend was a matchup of like really good teams. We've started to see more blowouts on divisional weekend.
So, but you have raised this point. Because of the convergence of NFL playoffs and now college football semifinals, you think this weekend, and we can acknowledge that this weekend looks great, right?
Yep.
Starting with last night. But I don't think we've thought of it as this is going to be an annual thing. Appointment viewing, that this weekend will, every single year from now on going forward, will be considered one of the great sports weekends of the year because of the way these two events converge.
It's like, I'm open to the possibility. We need to have another good game tonight, and then wild card weekend, which typically has a lot of blowouts, I think we need to start seeing some decent games on wild card. Excuse me, I beg your pardon, Mr. Commissioner. Super wild card weekend.
Doesn't feel like a great weekend this particular weekend. We'll get to that more in a moment. Also from the world of college football, we did have the news yesterday that Carson Beck entering the transfer portal. I think it makes all the sense in the world for a couple of reasons. One, as Jeffrey is alluding to, he will get paid plenty of money by his next college football team. Probably as much money as he would be making in the NFL. So that is great. And it's another reason why you might complain about the state of college football these days, but the state of college football, the state of college basketball, et cetera, what it does is it encourages borderline prospects or prospects who think that they might be able to improve their lot or whatever to stay because they can get paid staying in college football. So, just the money that's going to be in his pocket makes sense. But the other thing is that one thing we've seen from the NFL is that if you are a quarterback who has played a lot in college, A, that experience is valued by the NFL, and B, it positions you well to come in and perform in the NFL. And we say that in the person of Bo Nix, who played, I think, 17 years of college football. And we see that.
It was at least 16.
And we see that in Michael Penix. Small sample size for Michael Penix, but looked good in limited games for Atlanta. Both those guys played endless amounts of college football. They transferred. They had success. They were drafted higher than one would have imagined were projected to. And so they cashed in there, and they're having success as soon as they hit the league. I'm not saying that Carson Beck, the exact same thing will happen, but it certainly lines up for him. I think it makes all the sense in the world for Carson Beck, who would have been a second, third-round pick had he gone in this year's draft. It makes all the sense in the world for him to stay in college. You?
Yeah, there's a few things here. Number one, shout-outs to Carson Beck. If you're going to announce that you're going into the transfer portal, like, we should have a Harvard Business School case assessment for what Carson Beck did yesterday. Number one, withdraw your name from the draft. So therefore, everyone thinks this is pro prospect. Then number two, announce that you're going into the portal and also announce that Miami is the leader. Not that you're transferring to Miami, but Miami's the leader and that you are open for business. Because Miami, by all accounts, seems to raise the level of the raise the price tag. So that was fantastic. Also, if he does wind up at Miami, I think that's I actually like things that make sense. When you look at Carson Beck, he does not look like a Georgia quarterback. He looks like a Miami quarterback. He's got the Florida look. He's got the sleeve tat. He's got more of a Florida look than he does.
Are you talking as aesthetic or in terms of style of play?
Aesthetic. No, style of play, he actually is more of a Georgia quarterback.
I was going to say.
Very safe.
Yes. He's not really. Actually, to me, the problem with actually going to Miami is you might then be compared to the most electric quarterback in college football, and you might suffer by comparison.
I believe also he's dating one of the Cavender twins, and that was the other thing. During one of Georgia's bye weeks, he was gallivanting down in Fort Lauderdale. I just like when things make sense.
Where do you think, if you were really his advisor, though, you were advising him on where he should go to find the most, not because it makes sense or because you'll have fun.
Yeah.
But where you should go in terms of having the most success and positioning yourself best for the NFL going forward, where would you put him?
The other part of this equation is presuming this door is still open, you should stay at Georgia.
I think that's probably true.
Now, what we don't know is, was it advised because I think it's very clear to me, Gunnar Stockton is not the answer. Does Georgia have something behind another door, though? Is the question that I have.
Well, that was what I was going to ask about Georgia. Where does this leave Georgia?
I do not think they can go into next season with Gunnar Stockton as QB1. And we obviously know Jaden Rashada. To me, it's very obvious. Rashada's not the guy either. At this point, if Rashada were good, he'd be playing somewhere.
Who's going to be starting in Alabama and Georgia next year?
Whoo, boy. I guess I'll say Ty Simpson.
He's been around.
At Bama?
He is certainly the logical successor, right? Do you believe in Ty Simpson?
Not really, because at this point it's I guess the one thing that I do respect about Ty Simpson is Ty Simpson has had every opportunity in this era to leave and go somewhere else. And the fact that he wants to be the Alabama quarterback, he has that opportunity. So I do put some stock into that. Guy that pays his dues and has the opportunity, and he's going to be with a good offensive scheme. I can buy into that. With Georgia, I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe I'll just say by default, Gunnar Stockton, but I don't believe in Gunnar Stockton. I think Georgia has offensive problems next year.
Well, right now, are you saying Texas is going to win the SEC next year?
Probably, because they're going to have the same schedule that they did. They get this schedule again.
That's incredible.
They just flip the venues. And we've already seen, you can lose to Georgia. Whatever. If they go to Georgia and lose, they'll still be fine. It seems likely to me that 7-1 would probably win the SEC again next year.
All right. Moving on to the NFL, there was some off-the-field stuff. The Raiders fired Tom Telesco, the GM. And I'll be honest, it's kind of weird how this has worked. We've seen coaches get fired, and then, like, the coach had already been fired, and now a little delay here, Tom Telesco is fired. Who knows? May work out that way in Jacksonville, too, right? Like, you may, in the end, have the coach fired first, and who knows, depending on who they hire as head coach, the GM may be tossed out as well, right? You're sort of seeing this thing play out. Tom Telesco, like, I don't know who picked the head coach, but he had a great draft.
Yeah.
Like, and what did they do that was stupid? I actually think the Raiders, like, maybe he's not a guy to believe in, but a franchise that has done a lot of stupid things over the years, except for maybe hiring the head coach that they hired, they didn't do.
And that was a Davis thing.
And I'm sure that was a Mark Davis thing. So I actually, I don't know why you fire Tom Telesco unless you need to bring in your next head coach.
The only pushback I'd have against you is they clearly went into this year with no quarterback plan. Like, their quarterback plan was, I guess we'll see if either AOC or if Gardner Minshew can do this.
Yeah, they were stuck sort of like you are sometimes.
And maybe their plan was they thought they would wind up with one of them, and then everyone had that mad
the deal.
They had that mad rush. I just really think that cleaning house is they are trying to get the coach GM pair.
And that makes sense. But I don't think he did, you know.
I don't think Tom Telesco, I don't think this is going to be like a black mark on his career. It'll be fine.
He had a terrific draft. Okay. So we got super wild card weekend.
And we're trying to decide if it's going to be mega super wild card weekend.
Of these matchups, and again, it's Texans Chargers, it's Steelers Ravens, it's Broncos Bills, it's Packers Eagles, it's Commanders Bucks, and it is Rams Vikings. I am making you tell me one underdog is going to win. Which is the underdog that is going to win?
I guess you have to realistically say Washington, because I'd say the Rams.
It's the Rams.
Okay,
right?
I was actually setting aside Monday because we'll be back on the show. You have to say the Rams.
It's the Rams.
Yeah, I think you have to say the Rams.
They got the better quarterback, and they've been hot, honestly, right?
Well, they'd been hot. I mean, they rested everybody on Sunday. Yes, they had been hot up to this point.
Until they didn't need to win.
I still don't know if I believe in their defense. I also am kind of buying the dip on the Vikings. I don't think they're as bad as they looked on Sunday. I think there was a universe on Sunday where that game, I'm not saying that the Vikings win, but that game doesn't become a blowout. Like, if you flip really just these couple of plays, if Goff gets called for intentional grounding in the end zone, and that's a safety,
right?
That flips that game. And then also Van Ginkle, who has a history of being an unbelievable disruptor of screen passes and taking them back for six. If Van Ginkle just makes an easy pick six, like, that game is a different game.
You have a interesting situation because Flores, of course, the Vikings defensive coordinator, is known for his
blitzing.
Season high rate was a league high 39.2% against the Lions, 54.3%.
Yeah, they were trying to make something happen.
Didn't work so well. But anyway, in the previous matchup of these teams, Matt Stafford against the blitz, 9 of 12, 118 yards. So you got Puka Nacua, throw slants all day long, right?
I'm not sure the Rams can
win that game.
I'm going to bring back an old bit. I'm not sure Stafford's healthy.
Well, and
that's the other thing. I do agree with you. Like, if you're saying I have to pick Stafford versus Darnold, who am I picking? I'm picking Stafford. I do not think right now Stafford looks good. The last month, like, this thing, they've been winning, and I have not thought he's played particularly well.
Steelers Ravens, we've talked about that one. Obviously Zay Flowers, as you said yesterday, is not going to play. That was confirmed yesterday.
Do you know what Lamar is as a favorite in this series?
This is the Steelers Ravens. Lamar as a favorite.
He's been a favorite 7 times. He's won twice.
Isn't this a different team? That is the narrative. Like, this is a, because of Derrick Henry, honestly, because of Zay Flowers, who's not there, this is a, because of their offensive, this is a different version of, like, we always thought those Ravens were incredibly limited.
Sure.
They would only go as far as Lamar's legs and arm could carry them. And when they got to the playoffs, that became limited because you started to see that he's, in fact, not a born thrower. And it's a story as old as time. Look at his playoff stats. They stink. But this year, he has been better, and his weapons dramatically better. He has put forth a MVP-caliber-type season. It's a different Lamar. It's different Ravens. And we saw that the last time these two teams met.
Okay, I'm setting all that aside. If I would rewind the clock 365 days, we would have been saying the same things last year. Like, in the end, when you get into playoff football, everyone is going to say, we are going to take away what you want to do. I don't know if the Steelers are going to be able to do it, but they're going to try and make Lamar beat them as a passer. And the problem that I've seen with the Ravens in the playoffs is, yes, all of that is true, but it's almost like, I don't know if it's because maybe their offense is extremely RPO-based, or it is a stylistic choice, or it's the, we know that they're trying to take away the run, so we're going to throw it. They almost like stubbornly try to say, all of you haters that say Lamar can't throw, well, here you go. We're going to prove he can throw. We're going to prove he can throw.
That's certainly what they did in the playoffs last year. That was
like, and that, by the way, that's been kind of the case in all the playoff losses. And this is, I'm with you going back to yesterday's discussion. If they lose this game, there actually needs to be a legitimate discussion of, is, because we keep doing this blindly, like, well, best player in football.
We talk about whether the Grizzlies are a regular season team.
Are they just a built, is Lamar Jackson built for the regular season? Because you can't prepare for him week after week after week because he is a tremendously special individual. But when you get into the playoffs and everyone's good and everyone is going to give you their best shot, can you scheme him up?
So in week 11, when the Steelers won, against zone on third down.
Yep.
Okay. That's what they do with Lamar.
That's what most people are going to do on third down. Lamar.
Against zone on third down, again, this was in the loss, so we're self-selecting here. He was one of six for a QBR of 4.6. He was terrible. Let's be honest. He was terrible.
And I think it matters less about coverage. What does matter is if you have athletic defensive linemen. I'm not saying they can run with Lamar, because there's not many people in the NFL that can run with Lamar. But if you have defensive linemen that can pin Lamar in and force him to throw from the pocket, he has yet to prove that he can do it.
The problem is, if you're whatever you think on that side of the ball.
Yeah, what happens with Pittsburgh?
What
offense?
Happens when Pittsburgh's gets the ball. Offense is what's going to happen with Pickens? What's going to happen with Russ? Like, do you have any faith in that?
No,
and that's the thing. I have no faith.
It feels like it's like breaking apart.
I of course think that the Bills are going to lose to the Broncos, but that's just
really
I'm. you never know. You know, you never know.
I could see you feeling this way next week.
Oh, well, then I will 100% feel that way. I think the Bills will probably be
the Broncos are just happy to
it
be here.
It just feels like a kind of a would be a disgraceful loss to lose that one.
I believe Josh has lost once at home in the playoffs, and Joe Burrow was on the other side.
Commanders,
correct?
Buccaneers.
I mean, we
no,
know
they where. Lost. They lost to the Chiefs in the playoffs last year at home.
No, no. Oh yeah. Well, okay. So they've lost to Mahomes. They've lost to Mahomes and Burrow. Congratulations.
Commanders, Bucks, what do you think?
I mean, we know where I'm riding. Like, quietly, shout out to me.
You're riding Baker.
Shout out to me for the humility I've shown this year. I could have done a Baker-Mayfield victory lap this year, but I had other battles to fight. Baker was awesome this year. Baker was, like, top five in basically every category that matters. Yards, touchdowns. Like, he was awesome. But again, credit to me, I did not take a victory lap this year. I let Baker's play speak for itself.
And in the end, Commanders rookie quarterback, tremendous rookie quarterback. He is a rookie quarterback.
On the road.
He is a rookie quarterback on the road.
Also, he says he would have played last week had he had to. He did get banged up last week.
What do you make of it's just Jermaine Burton was a problem in college.
Yes, he was.
And he falls in the draft because he's known character. Yep. He's a character guy.
Yeah.
I mean, by that, I mean bad character guy.
Correct. Red flag.
Bengals draft him. And
now, and he had, by the way, this whole year, character issues, same thing.
And charges of abusing his girlfriend, basically.
Yeah. I mean, to me, like, that's different than character issues. Like, that's that's criminal. Yeah.
All right, Jeffrey, what is coming up next on 92.9? We know Jason Smith is heading in here in his Jeep Grand Cherokee. We spoke to him about it earlier. What can we expect on 92.9?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Anthony Sane is going to join the program at 11:25. Parthi Padyai will join them at 1:25. Blake Topmeyer going to join us on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Tim Murray, fresh off his Orange Bowl win and 70 minutes of sleep, will be joining the program as well. Cobb with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Stay safe out there. We will be back Monday. For now, work is done.